The Athletic.
The only way to score is, of course, to play with a handbrake off.
Hello, I'm Ian Stone. Welcome to Handbrake Off, the Arsenal podcast brought to you by The Athletic. Our guests this week are Amy Lawrence and Nick Callow. Hello, guys.
Hello, hello.
Hi, Stoney, Amy.
Nice to see you all.
Nice to see you all, too. We have a special guest as well, who I will introduce in a short while. Now, before we continue, we should apologise to our listeners who were expecting a podcast last week. We did do one, but sadly the files got corrupted and it was lost forever. It was a good one as well, I thought. What I think was particularly amazing was Amy Lawrence being able to predict a 4-2 win over Leeds and an Aubameyang hat-trick. That was very, very impressive. Anyway, we are back, and not only are we back, we're backed up as well. So that won't happen again. We're recording this on Monday afternoon, the day after the away win at Leeds, featuring, as I mentioned, a hat-trick from Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang. So as an opening question, I thought I'd ask, what is your favourite Arsenal hat-trick? Amy, I'll come to you first.
Tempting to go with Kanu, obviously, for the Chelsea hat-trick, which lives on forever. But just for variation's sake, there's two European hat-tricks that I look back on with great fondness. Thierry Henry scored hat-tricks in Italy quite often, I think, but there was definitely one in Rome and possibly at Inter Milan. Did he get three or was it two that day? He tended to be sublime in those matches away in Italy for some reason. But I'm going for the one and only Ray Parlour hat-trick away in Werder Bremen in the UEFA Cup, I think, in 2000. And what was brilliant about that is I ended up sitting, and I absolutely can't remember the circumstances of why, but on my own in the crowd in the Werder Bremen area, and sort of got quite friendly with them. A nice family next to us. They were offering sort of, you know, to share their halftime snacks and so on. And we tried to converse as best we could during this game. And if you look up on YouTube, Parlour smashes in a couple of absolute screamers. And at one point they turned around this nice family and said, "Who is this Ray Parlour?" I mean, he wasn't the most famous of the Arsenal players of the time. Yeah. And I turned around and said, "Well, you know, he's called the Romford Pele." And the best thing about it was that they nodded very, very sincerely at that. Yep. There was, you know, no sense of that being in any way comedic. And they thought Ray Parlour was one of the best players they'd ever seen that night.
And I guess he was that night as well. Nick, what about you?
I'd love to live in the Amy Lawrence world because it sounds such a lovely place to be. And if it wasn't so well documented, we'd think she's making it up.
No.
Sharing sandwiches with the Werder Bremen fans and everything. I'm surprised. Well, first of all, thanks for having me back on with you guys. It must be a Europa League week. I know how the squad guys feel now. Oh. But I'm going to make the most of my opportunity. So you have to think of me again next time we're on. And I'm just amazed that Amy didn't select the hat trick where we sat together at Filbert Street.
Oh my God.
In August 1997.
Yeah.
And the one and only Dennis Bergkamp scored three goals, which all made Match of the Day's goal of the month. It was a 3-3 draw, and I think I was working for the Independent that night, and it was a nightmare for a journalist because there were three goals in the last minute of the game.
There were.
Dennis scored two unbelievable goals, two good goals to put 2-0 up. Leicester came back to 2-2, and then he scored that ridiculous goal where he brings it down with one foot, does a little twist, and that's it with his other foot. And then he went on to score a similar goal for Holland against Argentina in the World Cup, which I think Amy was at as well. Steve Walsh spoiled the whole night by scoring a last minute winner, equaliser for Leicester.
Yes.
But I mean, that was the night when, for me, Dennis Bergkamp announced himself as one of the greatest players that Arsenal's ever had and will have. And I remember at the time, some people still weren't convinced about him. And a couple of mates would tease me, saying, "Oh, your mate Dennis Bergkamp wasn't very good last week." And I said, "Well, that is my mate Dennis Bergkamp there." And for me, it was one of the greatest hat-tricks. I was going to go back to Malcolm McDonald in 1976, but Yeah. I think the Burkamp one eclipsed it.
Well, I have chosen the Malcolm McDonald one from 1976 because I was there. It was a freezing cold night in January or December or something. And Newcastle came to town. Supermac had recently signed for us. And he got three in a 5-3 victory. And it was just thrilling, really. It really was. And I also remember a side from Everton at home about 12 years ago when Stephen Pienaar ran in on goal and chipped our goalkeeper. And I think we drew 2-2. It was the coldest I have ever been at football. So I'm choosing Malcolm McDonald versus Newcastle in 1976. European football returns this week, and there's no better time to sign up for all our unrivaled coverage at The Athletic. Until February the 25th, we're offering new subscribers a half-price annual subscription. That's less than £1 a week for an entire year. To redeem that time-limited offer, go to theathletic.com/ArsenalPod. That's theathletic.com/ArsenalPod. And if you're enjoying the show, please leave us a review. Now, the team should shortly be making their way to Rome to play what I believe is the home leg of our Europa League round of 32 tie against Benfica. And we have a special guest on the podcast today to talk about that and other bits and pieces. We have a man who played for both Benfica and Arsenal. It's Stefan Schwartz. Hello, Stefan.
Hi, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I really enjoyed our history and memories from the hat-trick scoring by Arsenal players. I can see it in front of me.
Do you remember any games and you played where an Arsenal player scored a hat-trick or a hat-trick you scored? You said you hadn't scored a hat-trick yourself, but any hat-tricks that are particularly memorable for you?
No, I think what you said, that's amazing, but Canu, Bergkamp, Parla, Supermac in the European games as well, so I can see it in front of me. So, you said, I'm honoured and I had the privilege to play for both giant European clubs.
You did. Well, I was going to ask you about Benfica first. Are you an ambassador for Benfica, is that right?
I do a lot of work for Benfica, so I know the club very well, I know the people. Of course, I'm based in Portugal, so I know Benfica very well.
And how good are they at the moment, just by the way? Should we fear them?
You know, Benfica will always perform on the European nights. At the moment in the league, they are not very famous. They are underperforming, even though they have good individual players. But as a team, they haven't gelled together. They like to have a lot of possession. They try to create, but it's a little bit too slow and too obvious. And when they lose the possession, they are very vulnerable. They haven't the right balance, so the opponents take the advantage of the counter-attacking.
Stefan, there seems to be absolutely loads of young Portuguese players at the moment coming abroad. There's tons in the Premier League and making a big impact across European football. Have they got something good going on there in terms of youth development? What are they doing so right at the moment? How come there's this explosion of talent?
I think it's not just at the moment. It's always been over the years and decades. They're producing a lot of good players, young players. I think the philosophy and the most important and the most difficult in the youth to see the talent, but you have to see them 5 years ahead, how good they can be, and have the knowledge, and to get them at the right age and to educate them. They are very creative, a lot of competence, lot of good coaches in the youth system with a pro license, and especially for the youth. The clubs are giving good opportunities, they're giving a lot of psychologists following them during the whole days. So the academy are working really, really well. And that's, in general, the Portuguese football is very good to produce young, talented players for Europe.
Do you remember the Benfica-Arsenal matches of 1991? Were you at Benfica at that point?
Yes, I was. I played in the centre midfield. Arsenal at that time was probably the best team in Europe. Benfica, we were very good as well, probably one of the six best teams in Europe. So it was a very competitive game. Of course, it was a blow that we only played a home leg first and only get a draw and conceded an away goal. And we knew at Tibury, and especially the Portuguese teams, didn't have a lot of success before. And I remember the first 50 minutes at the Highbury, they smashed us, it was crosses, they were attacking all over. And we were yet lucky that it was 1-0 after 15 minutes. But during that, after 15 minutes, we get into the game, we get better. And we deservedly won the game because during the 90 minutes and extra time, we produced some very, very good stuff against a very excellent, good side as Arsenal.
You sound like you're a bit of an Arsenal fan deep down. I don't know if you grew up supporting Arsenal. But what was it like to join the club when George Graham signed you?
Amazing. I mean, to play with players like Seaman and the back four, Tony Adams, Lee Dixon, Nigel Winterburn, Martin Keown, Seabold, Ray Parler as a young boy, Ian Wright. And was a very competitive league. I came to as a great manager as George Graham is, as a winner. Of course, I came from Benfica with a different style of play, different approach with the ball on the deck, a lot of passing. Of course, I came as a central midfielder. It was more in the beginning. I have to adjust and adapt, not just the football-wise, but as well the culture. But it was more to win the second ball, win play from the opponent's half. But I learned a lot as a young player to play with such a great players from Arsenal.
And how was your drinking when you arrived? Did you fit in terms of the drinking culture we had at the club?
I must say that the team spirit, the team bonding was amazing. I have been fortunate with my teams and clubs where I've been. It was all the teams have been good team bonding, a good dressing room. I didn't see it too much. Because when I played for Benfica, we had to be at home at 11 o'clock.
That wouldn't have worked with Arsenal.
No, in Portugal, it's like 11 million. At that time, it was 10 million inhabitants in Portugal. And maybe 6-7 million is Benfica supporters. So you can't go out and have a drink. So if you say if you drink a beer, then they say that you had 10. So that's, we are very careful. Yeah.
I mean, you must have known what was coming. I mean, Amy sort of mentioned this before. Anders Limpar, you knew from the Swedish national team. So you must have had a little bit of information as to what it was going to be like there.
I mean, the professionalism from the players was second to none. And the team spirit. Of course, I think it's at that time, no foreign managers or coaches was that involved in the English football to develop it further. And of course, a little bit of the pub culture is the culture of English football, like it's in Italy, that they were red wine or the French or Spanish or Portugal. They, instead of beer, they drink one glass or two glasses of red wine. So you have to adapt and understand the culture where you're going to, and that's very important as a player as well.
It was a very eventful year you spent at Arsenal, wasn't it? I mean, I wonder what was the highlight. Was it getting to that European final, or which obviously not because you lost, or winning the Makita Power Tools Trophy when you first came to...
No, I said many, many great games, but I think Sampdoria away.
Oh, yes.
Cup Winners' Cup semi-final, and we were all, and against that Sampdoria team with such a great players. And the performance we made on that night away was unbelievable. And I scored the 1-1, and I believe, and then we took it to the extra time and to the penalties, and we could celebrate to go through to the final in the Cup Winners' Cup. That was the highlight.
I was fortunate enough to be at that game, and it was absolutely wild. It was like a classic European night where the energy was incredible. And I looked back at a YouTube clip just earlier on this morning to remind myself, and the atmosphere is absolutely incredible. And this was in the days, I think, where it wasn't particularly all-seater stadia. And you see when the goals go in that there's like the Italian fans are kind of running because it wasn't full behind the goal, like from halfway back to the front, like maniacs. And I think after one of their goals, the scorer rips his shirt off and twirls it round. It was a complete crazy game. And I don't know about you, but because it had been 3-2 in the first leg at Highbury, Sampdoria went 3-1 up in the game in Italy, and it was as if it felt like it was all over. They were really like flying, and then you got that goal,
But he's got to forget that now. Here's Stefan Schwartz. And it's there! Oh! Right at the death. Arsenal have saved it. 3-2 tonight. 3-2 from the first leg. It's all square again. Stefan Schwartz.
From a free kick, really late. They were all whistling. It was, they're trying to make it so hostile. And I think some people almost thought it was like a consolation goal. I didn't even realise because it was so frenetic and there was so much going on and there were so many goals. It was like, and still Arsenal lost that game 3-2 in the second leg. But actually, that was enough to take it to penalties. Did you have a clue what was going on? Because we didn't.
Now you know, it's the players. The players were fantastic and good skills. But, you know, football is more than that. It's about personality, character, to help each other, teamwork. And that was the night we did it even more. All the players, very strong-minded. We knew what we had to do. We knew it was only one goal to take it to extra time. And we believed in it. The personality, the characters of the character of the players. Yes, show what it was about to be an Arsenal player.
Were you tempted to take a penalty, Stefan?
No, not really. a lot of pressure, but of course, but we managed. We had the right players who took them, and the main goal was that we scored most of them, and of course we had one of the great goalies ever, David Seaman, who did his work and helped us to go through to the final.
I was going to ask you, Stefan, I mean, when you go through to a penalty shootout and you got David Seaman in goal, you must feel fairly confident.
Very confident. when you look at his career, you never see him that he's throwing himself to make a great save. It's always right there and get the ball in the hands. It's his positioning and the vision of the game, the understanding of the game, it's unbelievable. And of course, he's a massive guy. And he shows his personality, he shows his presence. So I think the opponents, they knew that it's going to be difficult to score against him.
Stefan, as I said, it was quite a monumental season you were at Arsenal. If my memory serves me right, George Graham got sacked in the February of that 95. What was it like being at the club then? What was going on inside the changing room when you heard that news that this incredible figurehead of the club had been sacked?
I mean, what he has done for Arsenal as a player and a manager, there's been a lot of history and story and trophies that he brought to the club and for the club as supporters. Of course, it was a shock, but it's something that we players couldn't get involved in. We have to still performing on the training pitch and do our work, concentrate and focus on the games in the league and the Cup Winners' Cup.
And somehow you still managed to get to the Cup Winners' Cup final again that season.
Yeah, in Paris.
Terrible, terrible.
You don't seem so keen to talk about this.
I didn't want to bring it up, I must admit.
No, we were quite convinced it's going to be go to penalties after extra time. And
yep.
As you said, we were quite focused, convinced that we could have won it through the penalties. And then, it's come like this strange,
ridiculous.
Special goal. Ridiculous
is
goal.
Is the word you're looking for.
the last kick of the game. So, was a pity. But that's life.
Stefan, you moved from, it was only a season, I think, more or less, that you were there. Had quite a few moves in your career. Did you just feel that it was difficult to settle or you wanted a different challenge? Or how come that you moved on to Fiorentina and went to try Serie A?
I think it was a cocktail of a few things. First of all, I think I played for Benfica 4 years. I adapted well to the culture and the style of game, how we played. It took a bit to adapt to the UK. I can't blame anything on the club. I would say that it's probably the most professional club ever I've been to.
But Stefan, was it the fact partly that George Graham got sacked and you had you know, a caretaker manager in Stuart Houston. There seemed a lot of upheaval at the club. Did you just think, you know what, maybe it's time to move on?
No, not really. I think, first of all, I was a young man, 24, stubborn, wanted to change a little bit, a few things, wanted to play more through the midfield. But I learned, I learned a lot from the time in Arsenal. And I think if I would be an older player, a little bit more mature, maybe my decision would be a different. But I felt some of the games, I felt that I wasn't used to my most of my potential during the games. And that, I think I get a little bit frustrated to, yes, go and try to win the second balls and play from the opponent's half. So there were a few things, but I'm really pleased and honoured that they didn't want to let me go, Arsenal. The supporters still remember me for doing my 1 year season. And I still have a very good relationship with Arsenal and with my ex-players.
Well, at the time I used to write articles for the Gunners magazine, and Stefan was the front cover photo for the first ever issue in 1994. I don't know if he remembers that. The great Gunners magazine. I've got a copy somewhere if he wants me to send him one.
Oh, yeah, yes, please.
I'll sign it with someone else's name. But actually, what I wanted to ask was a non-Arsenal question, if I may, because, of course, you ended your career at Sunderland. You were their record signing when you went there in the late 90s.
99, yeah.
99. I don't know if it's true, but it says online that you had in your contract that if you were to travel into space, your contract would become wholly invalid. Were you planning on becoming an astronaut at the time? Or is that just a made-up thing?
No, it's true. But not to become an astronaut, but to go into the space with the first commercial space shuttle. Yeah, it's true.
All right.
But Sunderland were not too keen on it, no.
No, fair enough. I wanted to ask you about the current Arsenal team. I don't know if you've seen much of us lately. Anything you particularly like about them?
I like the young players. They have a lot of good attitude, character, pace, creativity. If you're looking on the wings up front, I like even Kieran. Shows a lot of character, personality, responsibility for a young age as a defender. Of course, I think if you look at the players, it's a good individual players, but as a team, quite inconsistent. It's when you look at Arsenal, if they don't have the best of the games, then you know they will have a tough time and probably not win the games. Arsenal has to perform on a high level to win the games, but that's how the Premier League is today. It's very, very competitive. Of course, the other teams have invested a lot. But it lately has been looking a bit better than in the start of the season.
Knowing Benfica as you do, and you obviously got a bit of an eye on Arsenal, do you think there's a favourite for this tie? Do you think someone has the edge?
I would say Arsenal are a little bit more favourite, but not that much. But Arsenal the strikers start to score goals, which are positive signs for Arsenal. Benfica's don't create too many chances, and have to score they need a lot of chances. And of course the defense of the both teams are vulnerable, Benfica as Arsenal. So I think it's still gonna be a tight games, but Arsenal are a little bit more favorite than Benfica.
I just wondered if you had any views or opinions on Mikel Arteta, who's made quite an impact in his 1 year so far at Arsenal, but obviously still has quite a lot to prove in his first job as a boss. What do you think about Mikel?
No, it's fantastic to win two trophies in that's a short time. I think it's given about a confidence. Of course, this little soap opera, big soap opera it was during a couple of months, it didn't help the team. We all know that to have what is right or wrong, I don't know, but to be successful, we need a strong and solid dressing room, for sure.
Hopefully that's the way it'll go. Stefan, it's been great talking to you. Thanks for coming on the podcast.
It's great. My pleasure, and thank you for your invitation.
We were a bit with the handbrake at the time.
This is Handbrake Off, the Arsenal podcast, brought to you by The Athletic. Thank you to Stefan Schwartz for joining us and those brilliant memories particularly of the Sampdoria semi-final, not so much Real Zaragoza in the final. But thanks very much for joining us. We're joined now by Art De Roche, athletic writer. Hello, Art.
Hi, guys. How are you?
You know what? We're okay. I say we're okay. I was speaking for everyone. I think we are all okay. Let's talk about some of the pieces that you've written. Art, you wrote a piece about Hector Bellerin and Cedric and who should go in that slot. And you analysed quite deeply what they've been doing. You didn't really come to a conclusion, though, did you?
Well, I've got my own conclusion, but I just wasn't sure if it was best for me to say it at that point. I think for me, weighing up the options, obviously Bellerin's a lot more involved in progressing the ball from, I guess, the middle third to the final third, which we've seen quite a lot this season, especially since Mikel Arteta came in last year. But with Cedric being a bit more active in the final third, aside from Bellerin's goal against Leeds, I think I'd probably favour Cedric in that role. I think he's done an all right job as a rotation player since joining the club last season, but I don't feel there's any harm in giving him a run out at right back when Kieran Tierney comes back into his slot at left back.
This is interesting, isn't it, Amy? I mean, you know, you're talking about Hector's goal last night against Leeds, and he played well last night, and he does have doubters, but he sort of keeps producing and keeps linking the play. Perhaps Cedric's distribution and crossing is better, though.
Maybe. I mean, I think sometimes the difficulty with Hector is there's a sort of judgment based on when he first came through, and there was such enthusiasm for him as a very young player coming from Barcelona, and he had great pace and energy. And then when he had his injury, people sort of said, oh, not the same player. And I think there had always been a few question marks about him learning his trade as a defender in terms of positionally and so on. But I do kind of think for any young defender, it helps a lot if you have a functional midfield in front of you for a start, and a kind of settled back four. And I'm not sure that's really always been the case for Arsenal in much of Bellerin's time. So it's funny to think of him still learning, maybe at this age in his mid-20s, but there is still stuff for him to develop. But I like him. I think he's got attributes that are things Arsenal need. And as a I think his character that he brings to the team is, he really, not that it's necessarily the reason you get picked or not, but he deeply cares about Arsenal. He does, and I think that's quite valuable, to be honest, as well. But it's nice for the manager to have options in that regard. And lots of people have rotated fullbacks, in recent years quite successfully. It's not quite so easy to do on the other side because Kieran Tierney is so obviously the main man on the left-hand side.
I absolutely agree. Nick, it was sort of strange with Hector Bellerin because there was a moment when he seemed to bulk up quite considerably. And then we all heard he was on a vegan diet as well. It was slightly confusing, I think, to quite a lot of us.
I'm a bit the Amy school here because I've got a soft spot for Hector. And I think it does say a lot for him and his contribution to the theatre. He's been at the club such a long time. He's got Arsenal running through his blood. He's the sort of guy that would take it very seriously about the short sleeves or the long sleeves when he's captain. These things that are, just part of his sort of DNA now. He's an Arsenal man, and he gets what it means to be an Arsenal player and what the club needs going forward when there's so much sort of turmoil and change in recent years. And he gets a lot of stick. He's not as bad as people are saying he is sometimes. And as Amy says, he's compared to his sort of more youthful self when he was like the fastest man in the world, only beaten by Usain Bolt. And he could sometimes cover up for his mistakes.
Yes.
But I think he's developing into a more mature player. Having said that, I'd love to see Art's experiment put into practice, and we could try Cedric at right back for a bit once Tierney is fit. If it works, then great. If it doesn't, then, let's keep Hex all the time.
Well, it's nice to have cover on both sides, isn't it? And we've also now got cover in the sort of attacking midfield area. James, who can't join us today, sadly, but James wrote a piece about Martin Odegaard's first Arsenal start against Leeds last night. Art, I'll come to you first. How do you think Odegaard played? I mean, James did a minute by minute bit, and he was enthusing about one particular touch, but he looked more than useful, didn't he?
Yeah, I think what really helped him was having loads of technical players around him as well. We had Emil Smith-Rowe starting off the left, and then Bukayo Saka. I know he's more of a winger, but he's still very sound technically. And I think with Ceballos as well, just playing off those two in midfield each other, I think they really played well. And with Odegaard as well, what I was really, really excited by, I guess, when watching was just how quickly he moved the ball, quite similar to Smith-Rowe on the left. They moved the ball quite quickly with minimal touches. And then when you have to deal with that as a defender, that's just going to create even more problems. And I think having those players start alongside each other is something that's quite reminiscent of that Arsene Wenger Arsenal from, I guess, the early Emirates era, we'd call it, I guess. I know maybe that may not be the best time for most Arsenal fans, but that's when I was kind of growing up, and I really did like that Arsenal side with Nasri, Fabregas and Alex Leb at the time as well. And I think that's really kind of, I don't want to say he's going to do something spectacular every game, but it's just something that I liked to see from the Leeds game yesterday.
I mean, Amy, it was a really decent start. And, you know, Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, obviously, it really helped him. He enjoyed having those technical players behind him.
Oh, God, it was extremely exciting at points. I mean, Odegaard is clearly finding his way, and he's not played a lot of football this year. So I think it would have been unusual had he come in and been dynamite from the get-go. So to have a competent, if not like completely dazzling first start, I think is absolutely fine. But the contributions of particularly, I mean, Saka in that first half, I almost couldn't find words. I just think he set about Leeds, and they just
couldn't handle him.
Felt like they had to do whatever they could to try and stop him, and they couldn't.
No.
There was nothing they could do. And it was really fantastic. And what's amazing about Saka when he's in that kind of mood is it doesn't matter if he gets his shirt pulled, or if his temperament is brilliant, or if he gets kicked, or if he gets pulled down, or if he just has a bog-standard foul. His determination, he just gets up and goes at them again without getting too emotional, too sort of het up. He's being targeted now, which is a sign to an extent of quite how good he is. But the way he's handling it and just continuing to attack teams is something else. And on Odegaard, really, I'd love to hear from Nick, because I know you were in the stadium there yesterday. And watching on TV, you get an idea of his movement. He seemed to be coming deep quite a lot. He seemed to take a touch, and his instinct, maybe unlike Smith-Rowe and Saka, is not to burst forward, it seems, but to maybe drop back almost in an Ozil-esque more of a manner to be trying to find those slightly more unusual, deeper spaces. How did you find that he looked, Nick?
You're not wrong there, Amy. I mean, that was, and I'll tell you what a privilege it was to be at the stadium last night, because beating Leeds is something I was raised to really relish. And although I was there as my capacity as a neutral journalist, we hate Leeds, and that was just a fantastic night. And to see Odegaard's debut, I felt a bit sorry for him at the end. A colleague of mine, George Cummings from the BBC, did one of those pitch side interviews afterwards. He said what a lovely lad he was, how he feels at home at Arsenal. You can see on the pitch, he seemed very sort of settled there. He said the weather's great because it reminds him of home in Norway.
Yes, the rain.
And
yeah.
I thought the poor son, he could actually play a few months, have a great time at Arsenal, disappear without any fans getting to see him play in the flesh. Which will be such a shame. And to see him, as Amy was saying, to see him, the way he moves around, he's just very light-footed. He does pick up very intelligent positions. He wanted the ball a lot. And when he gets it, he moved it quickly, and he didn't try to be doing too much. He's not. You know, they're calling the Norwegian Messi, but we're not going to see him dribbling past three or four players and dinking the ball into the net, I don't think. But at the moment, you know, as he sort of eases his way into the team, he will use the ball very intelligently, and hopefully he'll be slipping those balls forward to Laka and Aubameyang to score lots of goals in the way that Ozil could have done and should have done more often.
It's nice to have options. Amy, you wrote a piece, a great piece, by the way. It was very enjoyable and also a little bit sad to read this piece about the mercurial talent that is Nicolas Anelka. One thing that you said that really struck home, 12 clubs in seven different countries. I think that says quite a lot about his ability to settle in one place.
I think in his entire career, he only reached 100 league games at one club.
Which was Chelsea, right?
Yeah. So I have a soft spot for Anelka, and he's clearly got baggage and controversial elements to his way he played the game and the way his career meandered, let's just say. But when I look back at that boy who turned up controversially at the age of 17 from Paris Saint-Germain, and they went crazy in France when he joined to come to Arsenal, because
for no money,
it was half a million quid, and I think that it didn't even need to be that. That was almost a gesture to sort of save the kind of complete and utter breakdown of sort of international relations, almost. But the French called it l'affaire Anelka, and it was the major story across their sort of sports news outlets for quite a while, because they had this principal, and the Clairefontaine Academy, which was a market leader, if you like, at the time. If you think of Anelka being in the year below Thierry Henry and David Trezeguet, just when we're talking about strikers, you know, to have a generation that produces that amount of quality within sort of 12 months, they used to take 20 kids per year, and it was a residential two-year course at Clairefontaine, and the idea was to polish these wonderful young talents and turn them into potential great footballers of the future. And a lot of them went on to have incredible careers. And Anelka, you know, for them to put in that amount of work, and he was technically Paris Saint-Germain player, and he'd made his debut and he'd scored for him and what have you, and to move abroad before he'd really made much impact, probably a handful of games or so, they just thought that was appalling in France. And it was really Arsenal and Wenger's knowledge of the French market there, taking advantage of the fact that at the time there wasn't much in the way of compensation, and they weren't really allowed to offer professional contracts to sort of 17-year-olds or however old he was at the time. So he couldn't even have a proper contract, like a really big one at that time in Paris. And of course, I thought, I'll see if we can get this guy. And Anelka being Anelka, which is, he is a very single-minded man, and I think always was, and carries himself in a way that he just doesn't care what other people think. He was a bit like, look, I haven't played that much at Paris Saint-Germain. I think I'm good enough, so I'll go somewhere where they'll play me. And he just went. And in that couple of years that he was at Arsenal, it was watching, you knew you were watching somebody absolutely exceptional, a prodigious, prolific, unbelievable talent. It was so exciting. And it, of course, it coincided with the time of great excitement anyway, because, you know, Wenger had come and began to build what would be a, you know, maybe the first sort of modern title winning type of team with this great mixture of British and continental styles. And he was fundamental and brilliant. And I think what comes across in the question when, you know, I was asked, so, you know, just write about the mad career of Anelka, and you think, oh, God, there's a lot of ground to cover there. But it kept coming back to this question, which Nigel Winterburn articulated really well when I asked him what he thought about this. Essentially, leaving when he left, you know, he drifted. He went from club to club to club. Should he have gone to Real Madrid at that age when he did? Things was going so well for him at Arsenal, and he was in an environment where he felt comfortable. He was with a manager in Arsene Wenger who he trusted and respected. And if he'd have stayed that bit longer and matured more and left a bit of a legacy, maybe his career would have been different. And maybe, did he need to go from club to club to club to club to club? And as Nigel said, perhaps he would have had a different career. He didn't have by any means a bad career. He did achieve loads, but could it and should it have been more? And if he had not been in such a hurry to keep moving clubs, he could have maybe had a outstanding, iconic image legacy at three or four clubs instead of having scattered around dozens of clubs, some of which went better than others. And was that all down to Nicholas, or was that a little bit of influence by people who encouraged him to move? It's hard to say, but you know, you won't find him being critical of what he did. He believes he did all the things that happened for the reasons that felt right to him at the time. He's a fascinating character, that's for sure.
No doubt he is a fascinating character. Oh, I mean, how aware were you of Nicholas Anelka? You didn't see him play for Arsenal, but you would have seen him play for other teams.
No, I didn't. So I first saw him play when he was at Bolton, I believe, and then obviously mostly at Chelsea as well. I think the one image that sticks in my mind was when he scored at the Emirates for Chelsea and he didn't celebrate in that. I think it was a 4-1 win in 2009. And he also...
A vague recollection of this. Yeah.
I think he scored a few for Bolton against Arsenal as well. So I had more memories of him hurting Arsenal than helping. But I still feel that what I was seeing was a great striker. And we obviously saw that... when he won the league at Chelsea as well with Ashley Cole there as well. But yeah, I think overriding kind of memories are of just what a good striker he was when he was in the Premier League with Bolton and Chelsea. And obviously he had that little episode at West Brom as well, which I don't think many people will forget. So yeah, those are kind of my thoughts.
No. Nick, you interviewed him.
I think I mentioned earlier, Stoney, that I used to contribute to the club's Gunners magazine, and one of my roles was to do sort of feature interviews with some of the players. And after Anelka scored in the FA Cup final in 98 to secure the first double for the club since 1971, something I thought Arsenal would never do again, do the double again, I did an interview with Anelka, and for something different, I went on a little trip with him around the Arsenal Museum, which I don't know if you've ever been to it, but certainly it was not the biggest of exhibition places, but they've got a little sort of bit with, you know, for Arsenal legends, and there's Mickey Thomas's boot from when he scored the winner at 89 Anfield, and then there was Charlie George's shirt, the yellow shirt from 71 Cup Final. And I said, look, this is Mickey Thomas did that. I said, now this is what it means to do the double. This is Charlie George's shirt. And you are going to go down in history as one of the greatest ever Arsenal players has ever been, because you've scored a goal that's won the FA Cup final to win the double. Thinking that he might go on to be a great player and so on. But just doing the double, there isn't anything bigger, I thought. And he just sort of shrugged his shoulders and smiled. Okay, yeah. Maybe. And of course, what happened afterwards was so sad, the way he left the club. And I remember the chant when he left was chim chimney, chim chim cheroo, who needs Anelka when we've got Canoe? And how soon he's forgotten. And he got dogs abuse every time he came back to Arsenal. So I always thought it was a shame, because I think
not for me.
If it hadn't been for the influence, no, nor me. And I think if it hadn't been for the influence of his brothers and so on, he might have stayed there. And I'm sure Arsene would have loved to have kept him for many, many a year. And he might think, maybe my career is not so bad and I've made millions of pounds and so on. And like they always say, you know, George Best, where did it all go wrong? Maybe you think it didn't go wrong. But I think as Arsenal people would like to think he should have spent his whole career at Arsenal and be in the museum alongside Charlie George.
By the way, a couple of things. One, that museum, however small it is, bigger than Tottenham's museum. Right? the other thing I wanted to ask you briefly, just about last night's game.
I've never been.
Yes, well, I wanted to ask you about last night's game briefly. When they brought Willian on, I've seen various people moaning about this. We were imagining every Arsenal fan sitting at home going, why him? Why him? I'm assuming that was the same feeling in the stadium.
Yes, but it just, you know what I thought? I thought exactly the same thing. Then I thought, hang on, this game's sort of done and dusted. And Arteta must be thinking, I'll give him a game. He's bound to get a goal or make a goal, and it'll just, his confidence will be up, and everyone can stop asking me questions. Why do I pick this guy? Is he my son? And so on. But before you knew it, it looks like Leeds were going to come back. It's Leeds scored two goals, and all he's done is give the ball away.
Yes.
And it's just, I almost feel sorry for him. I know he's getting well paid and so on, but you know, I don't think he's actively out there. He's not some Chelsea agent, as some people call him, actively out there trying to disrupt the club and, you know, do deliberately bad things for when he's on the pitch. He wants to do well, and I feel for him a bit. You know, he's an Arsenal player, and I don't think if there was crowd in there, would they be booing him? Maybe some people would be, but I mean, he needs to be kept out the firing line. At least he doesn't start any games anymore. So
yeah. But kept out the firing line for the next 2.5 years.
Yeah,
that's just a personal opinion.
Well put, Stoney. Yeah.
In all seriousness, though, that, you know, you get the feeling that Arteta's trying to manage Willian's situation. I mean, yes, like you say, it's 4-0 in a home game. You're looking like you're cruising. Like, this could be the one that helps you sort of get something to build your confidence. But he's not the only player who needs looking after in terms of that kind of thing. And I think Pepe has just begun to find some momentum and some rhythm. And then he might have loved to come on against Leeds. And, you know, everyone noted that moment when Alioski sort of sulkily sort of trudged past when he got substituted as Pepe was warming up.
Same amount of contact as at the Leeds game, isn't it?
Well, I can imagine that Pepe would have loved to come on and maybe try and get a goal or something and turn around and go, oh, look, you were rubbish and you got substituted and here we go. And I just think there's a danger of, while I completely sympathise that Arteta has got this asset that he was very involved in bringing in that he wants to make work, there's lots of other people who need a bit of time as well, a bit of looking after, a bit of feeling good. I mean, Martinelli is another one who's been mentioned, you know. They all want minutes. They all want competition. They want to feel that vibration. So I think it needs to be fair. Otherwise, you run into potential other problems with people think within the club or within the squad maybe saying, well, why don't I get half an hour against Leeds?
I'm sure this is not the last time we'll talk about this.
Just one final point, you might edit it out, but after the match, you know, the players come, the substitutes come, they usually sort of run up and down the pitch just to get a few sort of miles in their legs. But they played a little mini sort of 3-4-5-a-side match.
Did Willian play well? Is that what you're
saying? I'll tell you what, it was while Arteta and someone doing their pitch side interviews with the TV. And I thought, I might take a video of this. And I could see Willian. I bet he does some special tricks. He was through one-on-one on goal. He just hit it about 5 foot wide in a practice game with no crowd, no pressure, nothing. I thought, oh, my God, he really has lost it. Maybe his legs have just gone.
As I say, we'll probably talk more about this in podcasts to come. I say probably, definitely is what I mean. Let's have a quick game, and it is a quick game, of Random Arse Generator, where we, Tayo, our producer, gives us a name of a former player, and we have to talk about him. The name of the player this week is Tomasz Rosicki. Art, I'll start with you. Tomasz Rosicki, give us a fact or something you know about Tomasz Rosicki.
He's currently director of football at Sparta Prague.
Nice, I like it. Amy?
Isn't he a guitarist? I know, he's got some sort of slightly punky band that he was always in. I think he might even sing as well. He's definitely got a musical sideline.
Great. I hope that's true. I think it is. Nick?
I'll give you one little fact about Tomasz Rosicki, is that he had 15 years between playing for the same club twice. So he started off Sparta Prague in 2001 and he re-signed for them in 2015. There's some people don't even support clubs that long. So that's just quite a unique sort of career turnaround that he went 15 years between two clubs, the same club. I'm not quite sure how to put that.
All right. I think
what a player.
You know, we got the general gist. I always think of him playing balls with the outside of his foot, playing passes more than anyone else I think I've ever seen. Is it Rosicki or Rosicki, by the way? Just does anyone, Nick, you said Rosicki there, but
well, it's, I think it's Rosicki, but I always like to say Rosicki. I always like to say the names on my own terms.
You know who I used to like at Arsenal as well? Terry Henry. He was great.
Oh, Terry Henry, yeah.
Yeah, no, the outside the foot. I like that one. Art, have you got any more?
He scored quite a few goals against Tottenham.
Yes.
Oh,
yeah, great goal against Tottenham, yeah.
Including in the 5-2.
Yeah.
One of the 5-2s when he scored. Oh, that was a marvellous afternoon, that one. I remember the passion when he scored that goal and the noise in the crowd. I think he got the third or the fourth before Theo walloped in the fifth. Amy?
Well, I'm just remembering. I remember how excited I was about it was announced Arsenal signed him. It was one of those where I can remember where I was, because it was during the World Cup of 2006 in Germany. And I was at a game, I think, in Hamburg. I have to look back at the stats. I can't remember who was even playing, but I was at a game between two countries who were not the Czech Republic. And the Czech Republic were playing someone on the same day, and he scored, I think, a couple of brilliant goals. It was either that day or the day before. And it came through that, like, there and then, that he was signing for Arsenal, like, which was quite odd because it seemed to be right in the middle of the tournament. It was quite exciting because he had been playing in Germany for Dortmund, and everybody that I spoke to in Germany raved about him. And he just had a phenomenal, brilliant goal-scoring game for the Czech Republic. And it was one of those where you thought, great, you know, the club's done something brilliant and got hold of a really, really top player. So, yeah, just say that. Apparently, I think he got 100 caps for the Czech Republic, which is not shabby.
A couple of things that Tayo has just sent to me. Injuries robbed of the best years and an exceptional player. That could apply to almost anyone who's been at Arsenal in the last 15 years. And also the most Arsene 2 player ever, this side of Cazorla. I think that's a fair point, actually. He had a lovely way about him. Any others before we move on?
I think he did left a sort of slightly disappointing memories because we expected so much from him. The little Mozart, wasn't he? He was supposed to orchestrate the team, and he just never quite did it apart from in odd flashes. And although he had about 10 years at the club, he's a beautiful football to watch, but I think we expected and hoped for more.
Still, it was a joy to have watched him on occasion. Let's have a song from each of you before we go. Art, I'll start with you.
Oh, no, I forgot about the song. Oh, my God.
Don't worry about it, Art. It's all right. It's all right. Amy will have something. Well, what have you got, Amy?
I haven't got as many this week as I normally do because I sort of forgot as well, slightly, a bit like Art. But bizarrely, I have this moment, and I'm afraid this is a stupid story because I can't even give you the name of the song, but one of the things I remember about the Sampdoria away trip where we had Stefan Schwartz on was that it was being in some bar or somewhere in Genoa, and there was some sort of like there was a weird 90s techno song that came on over the top of it was like, it sounded like the Laughing Policeman, but like on acid or something. It was just someone laughing manically over this kind of really heavy techno thing. And if I can, I'm going to make it my mission to try and find this thing. I did have it on tape because it became so symbolic of a great away trip. Failing the fact that I don't have that song to hand.
It's by Josh Wink, Tayo has told me. Josh Wink did the tune.
Oh, well, I'm going to check it out and see if that's the one, then I will be very happy, Tayo.
Josh Wink, it is.
But if it's not that, I was going to, just in honour of Bukayo Saka, because he was just like so incredible, was a Expansions, Move Your Body, because just the way he just keeps going. It's a great dance track as well.
It's beautiful. Nick, what have you got?
Well, I think Amy's claimed the trophy, retained a trophy as ever, and I was slightly caught off guard. I should have remembered about the song thing, but when you mentioned Leeds earlier, I was a little bit young to remember it really, but the 1972 Cup Final, which Leeds won against Arsenal, the Cup Final song that year was called Arsenal, We're On Your Side. And it was a really great, old school, simple Cup Final song by the 72 Cup Final squad.
Arsenal, we're on your side.
I think after last night's match, it's fair to say that everyone is on Arsenal's side again.
I always picture them wearing velvet jackets. That might be the England World Cup squad. Frilly shirts looking like nightclub comedians.
It probably involves some of the same players.
It's possible. As Arsenal are on their way to Rome, I've picked a song by a group called Blink 182 called Quarantine. Okay. I don't know if they'll have to go into quarantine when they come back, but those rules have come in today, so it seems quite apposite. That is it for the Handbrake Off podcast for this week. Thank you to Amy Lawrence, Art de Roche, Nick Callow, and our special guest, Stefan Schwartz. Also, thank you to Tayo Papula, our producer. I've been Ian Stone. Thank you for listening. Stay safe.